This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome back on to this edition of the Kona Edge. Happy Friday! I am Brad Brown. It's good to be with you. And we're doing things slightly different today. Normally, stories go out on a Wednesday, but with me taking some time off over the new year, I didn't have an interview. So it's going out on Friday, if that makes any sense. It did to me in my mind before I turned the mic on. So not to worry if it didn't. The good news is you're getting a podcast today. But I mentioned yesterday that I was hoping to survive my first swim session with our Masters group in a long, long time. The bad news is it didn't happen, and the reason being is I recorded an interview last night at 9 p.m. our time, so I only finished up after 10 o'clock. It was pretty late, and then realized that because I haven't swum for so long, I didn't know where all my gear was. I couldn't find my goggles. And I know it's a poor excuse, but life happens. And the swim squad's 5 a.m. in the morning. So by the time I had turned the house upside down looking for my goggles, it was close to midnight. And I was like, there's no ways that I am sleeping for 4 hours and then going to punish myself in the pool. So I was a bit tired from my bike ride yesterday, my hill repeat. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to get a couple of extra hours of sleep. I'm feeling fantastic today. And I'm going to go for a run as soon as I've done this. So we're still getting a training day in, which is fantastic. And Monday morning, bright and early, we will be in the pool, because if push comes to shove and I have to go buy new goggles, then so be it. But coming up on today's show, I'm pretty excited to share our guest story. He is a fellow South African, a guy by the name of Richard Laurie. But I think what's pretty cool is Richard grew up and lives in a place called Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela Bay, which if you follow the Ironman calendar, you'll know that Ironman South Africa is based in Port Elizabeth. But more importantly, 2018, the Ironman 70.3 World Championships are coming to town. And I'll chat to Richard a little bit about Port Elizabeth. And if you're thinking of coming, or if you are coming, what you can expect. So this is one not to miss if you're planning a trip to South Africa. I've been following Richard's journey in the sport for a good few years now, and just great to see him growing and becoming the athlete that he is becoming, which is fantastic. Got to race on the Big Island last year for the very first time, but all of that's on the way shortly. Don't forget, coming up early next week, we're going to announce that Ironman entry winner. We're giving away an Ironman to the value of $750. Entries are closed, and we'll announce the winner early next week. So make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast if you haven't yet, in whatever platform you use, if it's iTunes or Stitcher or Overcast, whatever it is. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and don't miss a single episode. Enough about me yakking. Let's get straight into our coach's corner. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by My Training Day Triathlon Academy, which was started in 2006 when Claire and Kent Horner realized their passion was helping other athletes reach their goals. My Training Day is home to online coaching, squad training, an online store, bike fitments, and nutrition assessments. What began with a handful of athletes has now grown exponentially, and Kent and Claire, along with 9 other My Training Day coaches, coach more than 280 athletes both nationally and internationally. My Training Day affiliated with Joe Frill in 2014, allowing access to a world of knowledge from one of the world's best-known original coaches. My Training Day makes use of tools such as Best Bike Split, Trainer Roads, and Training Peaks for power analysis, as well as Coach's Eye for video analysis. Their passion lies in helping others realize their full potential and reach their goals. My Training Day caters for any athletes, from your complete novice right through to your elite athlete. To find out more about My Training Day Triathlon Academy, simply head over to mytrainingday.com, or to find out more, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can check them out there, as well as all our coaches in the Coach's Corner. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured on the podcast and the website, simply head over to that URL, scroll right down to the bottom, and get all the details there. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. We head to Port Elizabeth now, here on the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman South Africa and the 2018 Ironman 70.3 World Championships. Richard Laurie joins us now. Richard, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, how's it, Brad? Thanks very, very much for having me.
It's always great to chat to one of my fellow countrymen, and you were born and bred in Port Elizabeth. It's the sort of spiritual home of triathlon in South Africa. It's right on your doorstep. You've got it pretty good, don't you?
Yeah, I must say, I'm often reminded when I'm out training just how fortunate I am to live in Port Elizabeth. I think besides the wind, we've really got it good here. So, yeah, the training routes are really awesome, and being able to train on the Ironman course itself, and obviously now the 70.3 route is really such a blessing. So, yeah, I think we can be very grateful. People are great. Everyone's friendly, and it's just really nice and relaxed there. So I love my city, definitely.
Richard, let's just touch on 70.3 Worlds. Obviously, it's coming up in September 2018, and we've got a huge listenership abroad, outside of South Africa, and a lot of the athletes will be coming to Port Elizabeth. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect. PEs, it's known as two things. It's known as the Windy City, and it's also known as the Friendly City. It's an amazing place. Yeah, it's a big enough city where everything's there, but it's got that small town sort of feel. Tell us a little bit about what folks can expect if they're coming out to PE in September.
Yeah, I think the athletes, even for myself, having traveled overseas and stuff like that, and seen some of the locations, going to Malulaba last year, I mean in 2016, it's always an exciting journey, and I think that it's going to be the exact same this time around for the international athletes coming in. Not to be biased, but I've been to a couple of places around the world, and I still think that South Africa is one of the most beautiful. I think that PE is really a little gem down on the south coast of South Africa, and the guys can be really, really excited. You know, we've got really awesome scenery, and obviously the Ironman course is really great. It takes you along the coastline, and I think, obviously saying that it's the windy and the friendly city, that's something that athletes should be prepared for. So, maybe in training, if there is a windy day out in wherever you live, then don't be shy to get out there and learn how to suffer in the wind, as opposed to just climbing on your indoor trainer or your treadmill, because it is worthwhile getting used to it. I think especially on a mental level, because if the wind does blow you, then it can be pretty harsh. But yeah, let's obviously hope and pray for a good race day, where everyone will enjoy it and where the weather will be good. I know Ironman SA in April last year was basically a picture perfect day. It was really, really awesome. So I think that we should just hope for the same. And yeah, you can expect to be invited by a really, really friendly community. The PE people are really laid back and very chilled. And I'm sure that the community is going to welcome the athletes from around the world and from around South Africa with open arms and make everyone feel extremely welcomed. I also think, athletes coming from abroad can be really excited because, unfortunately, our South African rand is not quite as strong. So I think that they're going to find that they're going to live like absolute kings while they're here. And another thing is, don't worry, there's not lions and wildlife animals running around our streets. I've always heard that and been asked that question when I travel overseas. So it's a beautiful place, really, really awesome city, great people. And I think that you can be really, really excited to come to Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yeah, and that little segment was brought to you by Tourism South Africa. Hopefully the check's in the post, Rich. But it is an amazing place to race. The crowd support, particularly on the run, is phenomenal. It's quite a compact run course. And the whole city comes out and really embraces the day. It should be a fantastic weekend. But Rich, let's talk about you. Enough about PE. It's a great place. We know that. But let's talk about you. Where did you start? When did the triathlon bug bite for you?
Yeah, I must say it was probably around 7 years ago or so. And I didn't actually even know about triathlon. I was a hockey player my whole life, a field hockey player. I just got to a point where I was needing a lifestyle change, and I was then invited by a friend of mine to go and marshal at a triathlon, actually the South African Triathlon Champs. And I still remember that day seeing Richard Murray and the likes of Henry Schumann obviously racing in the elite race. And I was a marshal at the bike turnaround point. So, yeah, obviously, you know, biking is probably my favorite of the three disciplines. And it was just incredible to see the level of fitness, and these guys were just absolute beasts. So I just decided, you know, let me give it a bash. So I entered the corporate Ironman, which is it's the day before the full Ironman, and it's a tenth of the Ironman. So it's just a small event, but really great atmosphere. And I actually did really well. I think I came 12th overall, and I was riding on a road bike. And yeah, it just really was an awesome experience. And from there, I entered some further events. Unfortunately, I went into winter at that point, so I got stuck into duathlon. And then, yeah, I focused on run, bike, run, and qualified to go to Spain, Gijon World Champs. And I went purely for the experience. I mean, I was on no level to perform. And it was really incredible. And it really just grabbed a hold of me. And as the years progressed, I just started to get, you know, more keen on performing, and I enjoyed the sport more. And yeah, I haven't stopped since, you know, so I'm looking forward to what the future holds. But obviously now I'm very much involved in coaching and racing. And I must say that a part of me is actually more passionate about my coaching than it is about my racing. I love racing and being competitive, and I love hurting and taking on a challenge. But I think seeing athletes perform, and you know, some of the stories that we have within the squad, you know, athletes losing 40 kilograms and entering full Ironmans, and it's just amazing to see, you know, what can be done within triathlon and within Ironman. So yeah, it's been great being a coach. But I have got goals for this year as an athlete, and I have entered a number of events already, and I will be obviously hoping to do well at those events, and especially one of them being World Champs in September.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich, I met you, it was a good few years ago. I think it might have been my first or second Ironman 70.3, so I'm guessing it was probably around 2011, 2012. And one thing that struck me about your sort of career is it's been a gradual build. You, as much as you said that first one, the bug bit straight away. You've been really, in my mind, really sensible about this thing, where you've gone up in the distance over time. You didn't go straight out and do an Ironman. Talk to me about the thinking there. I mean, last year was your first Ironman, and you've been around the sport for a few years now. What's with the slow progression, and what was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, I think obviously when I started the sport, I was about 20, 21 years old. I remember I actually turned 21 3 weeks before my first race, which was the corporate. And, you know, my father was a long distance runner. He was very much involved in Comrades and doing Two Oceans. And obviously, you know, me being the lighty, he was always, you know, don't start with the endurance too young. Don't start with the endurance too young. It's going to damage your body. And at first I was very, I was very stubborn, and I was like, no, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. Obviously just being a son. so I was, at first I wasn't too worried about it. I was like, you know, maybe I could do an Ironman and whatever. You know, my plan was to maybe do one by the age of 25, but I did a couple of half Ironmans. I soon realized that, you know, the distance that you cover within training is actually the thing that really hurts the most. So it wasn't for me necessarily the race that was doing the damage, but it was more the hours in training, and it was more the impact on the body and the muscles and the joints and stuff like that really took its toll. And obviously, you know, being an athlete that is very, very consistent in training and not missing training sessions at all, I really do feel the impact of training. You know, I'm very strict on going hard when I need to go hard and going very easy when I need to go very easy. But, you know, each week you get that buildup of fatigue and you start to feel it in the body. And I soon realized that Ironman definitely wasn't for me at a young age. So I made the goal of completing 10 half Ironmans and racing a full Ironman at the age of 26. And yeah, I did my 10 halves and I got to the age of 26. And to be honest with you, I still didn't feel ready. So I actually decided against it for that year. And I decided to give it another year. And yeah, that's when I raced last year. I think I turned 27 the day before full Ironman in April last year, and I'd done about 17 or 18 half Ironmans, and that's when I decided to go for it, you know. And I also wanted to make sure that my first full was really, it was a race. For me, a lot of people, like they said, you know, you should just use it as an experience and you should just do your first one, get it under the bank, like. And for me, I knew that I'd had like plenty of years racing experience. So I wanted to train specific for the event and I wanted to race a smart race and execute a good plan. Obviously, that was, you know, compiled by my coach Kent and me. And he was excellent in building me up for my first full Ironman, you know, and I stuck to what he gave me and I stuck to the plan on race day and it paid off really, really nicely. So I just, yeah, I think for me that athletes must be very careful to not rush into those major endurance events like Ironman and Comrades and, you know, maybe even the 56 kilometer two oceans, because it really can do damage early on. And what you'll find is that you'll pick up injuries and you'll get sick along the way a lot more, which will actually cause your growth as an athlete to be a lot slower because you're not going to be as consistent over the years.
Yeah, it's funny, Rich. I mean, I don't chat to too many South Africans here on the podcast, and I've mentioned Comrades quite a bit. And if you've, this is one of the first Kona Edge podcasts you listen to, there's a huge appetite for endurance running, particularly here in South Africa. And, the Comrades is a pretty brutal ultra marathon run between Pietermaritzburg and Durban. It's 56 miles or 87, 89 kilometers, and it is brutal. I've run a few of them, and you're not considered a real runner in South Africa unless you've run Comrades, which is ludicrous, but yeah, it's an amazing experience, and it should be on everyone's bucket list, but rightly so, not when you, I think, in your 20s. But Rich, let's talk about the sort of goal for Kona. Going into your first Ironman at Ironman South Africa, was the goal to qualify for the World Champs?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the goal was to win my age category. I never knew that. The goal was to win my age group. I was really hoping to finish as one of the top amateurs overall. And I was, you know, I was very blessed to have an amazing race day. So I think I finished as, I finished first in my age group and I was second amateur overall from South Africa with obviously Mark Pelu being an absolute animal. So I think he was about 2 minutes ahead of me. And, you know, it really was, it was a goal of mine to do well in my first Ironman. And I wouldn't necessarily say to silence the critics, but, you know, I knew that I had prepared well. So I was hoping, obviously, to win my age group. I knew if I had won my age group, then I would have gotten a Kona slot. I never knew that I was going to take my Kona slot because, obviously, of financial reasons, it's an extremely expensive trip for us South Africans. So, you know, obviously, it only really dawned on me once I had completed the race that I've now qualified for Kona and what do I do? So yes, I would say it was my goal to get a slot. I wasn't 100% confident in taking it. Obviously everyone wants to go to Kona, but at the same time, you know, money is money. And if it's not there, then, yeah, there's not really much that you can do unless someone jumps aboard and says, okay, well, we'll sponsor your whole trip for you or something, which unfortunately is not generally the case. So, yeah, it was a tough decision in the end, but I chatted to a couple of people. I chatted to Kent, obviously my coach. I chatted to Lucy Zelenkova, who was, like, really great. I actually bumped into her after the race, and she was like, Flip, you have to go to Kona. And then I also chatted to Kyle Buckingham, who also, you know, said to me that I should go I chatted to Alec Riddle and obviously chatted to my parents. And obviously, yeah, everyone pretty much was like, you know, you really have to take this opportunity to go. Obviously, my parents were a little bit more reluctant because they did end up helping me a little bit, well, quite a lot actually along the way. But yeah, I really just wanted to try and get some confirmation from guys that had been there before and that are experienced athletes. And once they gave that, then I was like, okay, let's go to slot allocation. And I think I ended up spending 22,000 rand at slot allocation because of my Kona slot and my South African world champ slot.
Yeah, that's a huge chunk of change. Talk to me about Kona itself and the build up to the race. We'll get onto the race in a moment, but obviously having to train for Kona after racing Ironman South Africa, which is late in our it's almost coming into autumn in South Africa, and then having to train through winter to get to Kona. Did you change much, or was it a case of same thing that got you to qualify in Port Elizabeth is what was going to get you to the Big Island?
Yeah, you know, I'm a very firm believer in having adequate rest, and I do believe that your mental aspect of the sport is just as important as your physical, if not more important. But, you know, for me, I had a break after Ironman SA. I took 1 month off from training, which I think actually ended up being 5 weeks off. So in a period of 5 weeks, you do lose a big chunk of fitness. You know, a lot of people often would say, like, you know, taking time off, it's not going to do anything. You're going to come back stronger. And yes, I do agree with that to a certain extent. You come back mentally stronger, but it really is a massive mountain to climb once you've taken, you know, 4 to 5 weeks off, especially, you know, how fit you were before you took the break. Obviously, the fitter you are, the faster you lose that. So I took the 5 weeks off, and I gave myself 24 weeks to train for Kona, which was more than enough time. And, you know, I chatted to my coach, Kent, and I said to him, you know, Ironman was really hectic and, you know, the training was really tough and stuff like that. I'd like to give myself a longer block of training, which was 24 weeks, so that I could rather space my training out more and do less hours on a weekly basis instead of trying to crunch everything into 16 to 18 weeks. And yeah, reason being, obviously, the fact that I really just wanted to have balance in my life, and I wanted to focus on my coaching as well. And I wanted to enjoy my Kona journey and not have to slog out, you know, 30 hours of training a week and really just hate every moment of it. So, you know, I really started nice and easy. I started on about 14 to 15 hours a week. And we gradually just built that up. And if I had to look at my whole Kona 24-week training block, on average, I probably only averaged about 19 hours of training, 19 to 20 hours of training a week. You know, where most athletes going to that kind of race that are competing as top-end amateurs are probably going in at maybe 22 to 25 hours of training on average a week. My biggest week of training was 29 hours. And I had a 29 and a 27-hour week back-to-back, and that was my biggest block of training. So, yeah, I think there was stuff that definitely did change. You know, I learned a lot from my first Ironman race. And, yeah, you know, training through winter was also a challenge in itself. I spent quite a lot of time on the indoor trainer. And, yeah, I mean, that's quite mentally taxing as well. But, you know, the benefits do come through, which is great. But yeah, we did change things up a little bit, and there was a lot learned, let's put it that way. And the next time I go back, which I'm hoping is going to be 2019, I think that we will do things in a similar way, but we'll change things up here and there just to make the journey hopefully more successful.
But as far as performance on the Big Island goes, what were the goals going into it? You mentioned your first Ironman, you went in there with the goal to win your age group. Going into Kona, how did you approach that?
Look, I did quite a lot of research. I'm someone who can be fairly analytical as an athlete and as a coach. And I did quite a lot of research, and I kind of after chatting to a couple of other athletes as well, and that Kona is probably around 20 to 30 minutes slower than SA. So yeah, I did a 9-hour 3 minutes in SA, and I hoped that I could maybe improve my ability by say about 15 minutes. So that would have meant that I was hoping for a sub 9:20 in Kona. Okay. And having looked at previous year's results, you know, sub 9:20 was putting me within the top 5 to top 8 in my age category. I was realistic in my build. I did say that I'm not going there to win, because it is my first Kona, and I've got to respect the island. I really had to. I also knew that I wasn't training as hard as what I could train for a race. And that was because I wanted to enjoy my first Kona experience as opposed to just absolutely drilling myself in training, and going there and, you know, having missed out on 24 weeks of life, and anything could happen on the day, you know. So I respected the island in that regard, and my goal, in all honesty, was I always set 2 goals for a race. I wanted a top 10 finish in my age group, and the second goal would have been to be on stage, obviously receiving a bowl from Kona, finishing top 5 in my age group. Unfortunately, I had some things in my build up that didn't go quite according to plan, and it caused me to really suffer in training for 2 weeks. And also I had a bike crash in Kona on the Monday before the race, where I hit a car on the highway, on the Queen K highway, and I wasn't able to run the whole of a race week, and I had to go and see a chiropractor, Lawrence van Lingen, and he helped me just to get it fixed up and get it sorted out. So I don't know if that stuff had an impact on my race at the end of the day. I don't think I will ever know that. But, you know, I really hope that things would have run a little bit more smoothly so that I could have felt good, because I was having a good race until I got onto the run, and then I just absolutely fell apart like 2 kilometers into the marathon, and it literally just became an absolute survival mode and an absolute sufferfest, you know. So I finished 18th in my age group in the end, which I think I was happy with. I finished it in a 9-hour 39. And if I had done the 21 minutes quicker than what I had hoped for, then I would have been sitting at around 5th in my age group, 5th or 6th in my age group. And that obviously would have been the result that I was hoping for.
Do you feel like you've got unfinished business on the Big Island?
Yeah, like without a doubt. I crossed the finish line. I was absolutely shattered. I still remember Paul Kay like shouting for me, and I couldn't even like barely acknowledge him. And people came to grab me off the finish line. And I remember very clearly like walking past Kyle Buckingham towards the medical tent area and just saying, I'm never coming back to this race ever again. And you know how us Ironman athletes are. You know, we enjoy the challenge, but yeah, the next day I knew I have to come back. I've got unfinished business, and I decided next year, well, this year, 2018 is not the year for me. 2019, it's my last year in the 25 to 29 age category. And I'd love to go back. If I can put together a good performance in Kona, if things can go according to plan, which is very, very challenging, you know, because it's really, really a tough race. All the stories that you hear about it, they are 100% true. It was the hardest day of my life. Like, it was extremely challenging. But I know that I never had my best possible race. And yeah, I think that I need to be grateful, though. And I need to be grateful that I got the opportunity to go and race in Kona. And, you know, when I got 2 kilometers into that marathon and I realized that I had 40 kilometers to go, it was my second ever marathon that I've ever run. You know, the first marathon that I ran was Ironman South Africa. And, you know, I've never been in that kind of position where you're 2 kilometers in, you know, the heat is absolutely unbearable. You're running on Ali E Drive. You know, you've got 8Ks out and 8Ks back on LEE Drive, and then you still have to run up the Polani Hill and then turn left onto Queen K Highway. So you think about that, and then on top of that, you've still got the Energy Lab. So, yeah, you know, mentally, it really toughened me up. But I think it really beat me up first before it's toughened me up. I really thought I wasn't going to finish the race at one point, and I was definitely thinking that my marathon time was going to be well over 4 hours. But yeah, I honestly prayed, and I thought about the people back home, and I thought about my girlfriend, and I just realized the sacrifice that had gone into this race, and I just said, you know, just keep moving forward, one foot in front of the other. And I actually adopted a strategy where I ran between every single aid station and I walked the entire aid station. And just to give you an idea, the aid stations were about 1.8 kilometers apart. So there were lots of aid stations on the route. And yeah, that's what I did for the entire marathon. I remember even stopping at the last aid station, and that was like probably a kilometer and a half from the finish line. And I made use of every little bit of liquid that I could get in, and I used the sponges and I used the ice blocks, and I kept my body temperature down as best as I could. And I ended up coming home with a 3:41 marathon, which was, I think, still respectable. My goal was to run a 3:20 marathon. Ironman South Africa, I ran a 3:14 marathon. So I thought that my goal was realistic. My running was in the best place that it had ever been. I thought that my target of 3:20 was good. But as I said, you know, it just unfortunately didn't go as I'd hoped. But finishing that race was probably the most relieving feeling I've ever experienced in my life.
Rich, what's the biggest lesson that Ironman has and triathlon has taught you?
I think, you know, And it sounds really corny, but you know, in Ironman in South Africa, we always have this saying: keep moving forward. And you know, for me, doing my first full Ironman in South Africa, I executed a perfect race plan, and there wasn't one moment in the race where I actually panicked and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm really losing it here. I could be blowing pretty much any time soon. Whereas at Kona, it was a different story. You know, like I really was in survival mode. And I just kept on reminding myself about that. Keep moving forward. I know that the motto of Ironman is anything is possible. But for me, that was something that I felt after the race more than during the race, because I didn't think it was possible during the race. But I kept on telling myself, keep moving forward. So I just think that athletes racing not just an Ironman, but an endurance event, just, you know, if your goal goes out the window, don't throw it away. Don't be like, oh my gosh, I haven't achieved my goal. Keep on going, keep moving forward and finish the race, get your medal. I promise you, afterwards, you are going to be far disappointed sitting at that awards ceremony without your medal and without finishing that race than, you know, if you just keep on going. And I mean, our Ironman SA, I ran a 4:35 average per kilometer. Ironman in Kona, I ran a 5:15 average per kilometer. It wasn't what I was hoping for, but I knew if I don't finish that race, it could retire me. Like literally, that's what I thought. It could like retire me as an athlete, because you spend so much money and so much time and there's so much sacrifice. It's just not worth it. So keep moving forward and be mentally strong. You know, every race, there are athletes that suffer. And, you know, I finished in a 9:39, a sub 10 hour, and I've never seen so many athletes in my life walking on a run course that are sitting at sub 10 for an Ironman.
Yeah, I think that's a great bit to leave it at. Rich, thanks for joining us today on the Kona Edge. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for chatting to us on the Kona Edge today.
Awesome, Brad. Thanks so much for the opportunity. And yeah, all the best with your training for Ironman South Africa. Yeah, enjoy it, man. And I'll see you probably either at Ironman SA or in East London. Okay.
Absolutely. This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for listening. Much appreciated. Before I go, another iTunes review. This one from The Sufferer. I think that's all of us, The Sufferer. It says, one of the best tri-specific podcasts out there. Big Brad Brown's doing this podcast thing right. The show is the right mix of short and longer podcasts, perfect for the average listener. He has relatable age grouper interviewees who are both interesting and motivating at the same time. The off-the-cuff interview style makes the show very listenable and enjoyable. There are numerous training tips found in each episode, which makes this a must-listen podcast. I love this training resource so much I became a patron to help keep the show running. Here's hoping BBB can go full-time. The Sufferer, you are a legend. Thank you so much for that review, and thank you too for becoming a patron. It is hugely, hugely appreciated. If you haven't become a patron yet, I've mentioned on the show the last couple of days that I need to make things really happen with the podcast in 2018. And one of the things I really want to do is go full time. I want to be able to do this as my job. My real job has been taxing, to say the least. I work for the national public broadcaster here in South Africa. And to say things are up in the air is an understatement. From not being sure if we are going to get paid at the end of each month to not having contracts, it's been tough, to be honest. And yeah, I want to be able to do this full time. So if you wouldn't mind considering becoming a patron, it would be hugely appreciated. And you can access a commercial-free version of the podcast by becoming a patron. So there is some benefit for you as well. It's all the meat and none of the fluff, so to speak. So you can go check that out. Just go to thekonaedge.com/support if you'd like to become a patron of the show. And that's it for today's episode. We're back again. I'm going to release an episode tomorrow, which is Saturday. But have yourself a great weekend. Hopefully you get some decent training in. And if you are, let me know how it goes. I'm going to be doing a ride tomorrow. I'll take some pictures and pop them up onto our social media as well. If you don't follow us, make sure you check out The Kona Edge across the various platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm going to take some epic photos on my ride tomorrow because I've got a long one planned. And I do get to live in one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I'm going to make you a bit jealous, particularly everyone in the Northern Hemisphere where it's cold and you're snowed in. I'm going to be riding around the southern tip of pretty much of Africa. So make sure you check us out on social media. Until Monday, have yourself a great one. From myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.